WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Any opinions expressed in this program are those of the host and do not represent the thoughts or opinions of 90.7 WVUA or the University of Alabama.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Season 1, Episode 7 of Pulse of the Nation, the podcast that covers all the hot political topics over the past week. I'm Braden Vick, your host, and today we will be investigating Ron DeSantis. Ron. For those of you who still don't have a clue who this guy is, he's the current governor of Florida. He comes off the back of a very impressive over 18% or so win. He nearly got 60% of the vote in his race against Democrat Charlie Crist. And I say Democrat in the loose form for Charlie Crist, if you don't know. He's a Republican turned independent turned Democrat. He's a political chameleon. But DeSantis definitely cleared 58% of the vote, largely attributed to very good GOP turnout and, quite frankly, terrible Democratic turnout, particularly amongst Black and Hispanic Latino voters. So there's that going for it as well. DeSantis is parlaying that into a likely presidential run. He has been running a shadow campaign for the presidency for months. He is apparently expected to make an announcement sometime around mid-May in a challenge to former President Donald Trump, who has been leading the polls, former President Trump, for the longest time. But for Ron DeSantis, there was an opening. So we'll go after the 2022 midterms. So those of you who don't know exactly what went down the midterms, Dobbs changed everything. The ruling that overturned Roe v. Wade changed everything. It was expected to be a very good GOP midterm, but with Biden being in office, historically, the party that is out of power does very well in midterm elections. This wasn't exactly the case. It was a bit of a wash. Republicans did win the House of Representatives, if only because of the incompetence of Jay Jacobs and Gavin Newsom of New York and California, respectively. I can get into that in a whole other episode, but this isn't going to be about slandering Jay Jacobs, a chair of the New York Democratic Party. This isn't going to be calling Gavin Newsom Gavin Flopsom. He's a current governor of California. That's not what we're here to talk about. But in the Senate, it was a bit of a different story. Democrats gained a seat. They, won Pennsylvania with former Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman defeating famous TV host Dr. Mehmet Oz by 5 percentage points. For Pennsylvania, that's impressive. Although many people wonder whether this was Josh Shapiro coattails, because Josh Shapiro ran against the Christian nationalist Doug Mastriano, who was a state senator. And Mr. Mastriano, he got destroyed. He lost by like 16 points, I think. It was bad. I think he lost by 15 points. Yeah, it was like 57-42 or something like that. Oh boy. I mean, like you think in 2018, like, Lou Barletta wouldn't be put to shame in terms of terrible Pennsylvania GOP election performances, especially in governor's races 4 years ago. But Doug Mastriano comes in and is like, hey, let's almost lose Cumberland County, which is shrunk by 10. And hey, we'll just get completely swept in Northeast Pennsylvania and just be absolutely destroyed in the Philadelphia metro area. I'd say that as if Republicans don't get destroyed in the Philadelphia metro anyways, especially in Philadelphia, Montgomery County. He's a good lord. But yeah, that happened, and Democrats also retained seats in Nevada. We retained a seat in Arizona. We also retained a seat in Georgia, with Raphael Warnock beating Herschel Walker. In Arizona, Mark Kelly defeated Blake Masters. Nevada, Kathy Cortez Masto defeated Adam Laxalt. This was attributed to Dobbs. Dobbs versus Jackson himself probably cost Republicans those four Senate seats, and it nearly cost them a fifth because Senator Ron Johnson only beat Mandela Barnes, Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, by a point. In Wisconsin, and so there's that story there as well. And because of this, this was attributed to Donald Trump. Donald Trump got those three justices to the Supreme Court, made it a 6-3 conservative majority to put them in a position to overturn Roe versus Wade in a 5-4 vote. That was that vote. There was a 6-3 vote to uphold Mississippi's abortion ban, but John Roberts crossed over with the liberals to try and protect Roe versus Wade, and that, of course, was to no avail. So Trump was blamed for that, and then they're thinking, well, who could beat Donald Trump? They turned to Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. He, unlike most of Donald Trump's candidates, can actually perform very well electorally. He won Florida in 2018 under a blue wave election, although whether that was due to Ron DeSantis' strengths or Democrats getting caught lacking in Florida. I mean, Bill Nelson sleepwalked his way to somehow losing to Rick Scott, of all people, in 2018. That was a complete farce for Bill Nelson. Well, I mean, he's parlayed that to be the head of NASA now, so that's the job Bill Nelson really wanted anyway. So, and also, there's debate, you know, with Rick Scott now being, you know, being in, you know, being in Senate leadership, trying to sort of, you know, run. I think he's running the NRSC, and that has not gone well at all. There's reports that Rick Scott's taking money from NRSC, but I'm not here to talk about that. Ron DeSantis, well, he won by 18 points in 2022. He won in 2018 with the blue wave election. Surely he can perform electorally well. He has a lot higher favorable ratings than Donald Trump in Florida and nationwide, for that matter. And the poll results. Just look at the polling over the past few months. It is Ron DeSantis beating Biden in crucial swing states like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Michigan, and Joe Biden beating Donald Trump in those same states. Same thing with Arizona and Georgia. So I think, well, why not nominate Ron DeSantis? You know? Well... There have been a lot of reports over the past week that helped me to make this episode, and they all essentially go down to the fact that Governor Ron DeSantis has the charisma of a wet paper towel. And that might be insulting to the wet paper towel, because, oh good lord, he has negative riz. He has negative riz. No, somehow it would be better if he had no riz, because then, you know, there wouldn't be instances like what happened a couple of days ago in Washington, D.C. DeSantis was there to make his pitch to, you know, to congressmen and women. And Congressman Lance Gooden of Texas was one of them that Ron DeSantis made a pitch to. And immediately afterwards, Lance Gooden went and endorsed Donald Trump for president. Yeah, I apologize if this isn't exactly more news rather than it is opinion, but I mean, this does have to be said. I mean, this still is news about Ron DeSantis' shadow campaign flopping. Flopping badly, I might add. Because, you know, Ron DeSantis, over the past few months, has been trying to go to war with Walt Disney World. He's been trying to go to war with the mouse because of what he sees as Disney going woke. Like, that is one of Ron DeSantis' main campaign plays, that he's going to go against woke. And this is borne out in the polling, too. I think today a Wall Street Journal poll said that the majority of Republicans would rather, you know, go after woke ideology in schools and businesses rather than, you know, protecting entitlements like Medicare and Social Security. Woke ideology, I don't know what that means. I literally don't know what that means. I guess to people like Mr. DeSantis, woke ideology means if you're accepting that of queer people's existence, if you accept that there's a history of racism by white people against ethnic and racial minorities in the United States, then you're somehow engaging in woke indoctrination of children or something. I don't know. But but in a press conference, Ron DeSantis joked that maybe he would build a prison next to Walt Disney World, next to Reed Creek Improvement District. Because if you don't know, the mouse has been absolutely pantsing Ron DeSantis in the legal world. Like, there's been a lot of 11th hour agreements that, you know, gives Walt Disney World and Disney a lot of autonomy over how they run things at Walt Disney World. Because if you don't know, Ron DeSantis essentially sacked everyone in the Reedy Creek Improvement District, which is essentially the corporate governance of Walt Disney, the governing body that governs Walt Disney World, and he replaced them with a bunch of DeSantis-aligned people. Walt Disney World put in a bunch of 11th hour agreements that would essentially curb and severely curtail the power of the new Reedy Creek Improvement District Board to make any changes to how Walt Disney does things. So, I mean, you would think for someone who is viewed as, you know, part of the intellectual right-wing populist wing of the Republican Party, they do their research when it comes to corporate law. But clearly, either they haven't done that case, or if they have, then their knowledge is severely lacking compared to, you know, the corporate lawyers that Walt Disney World employs and Disney employs. They are some of the best corporate lawyers in the world there to protect the mouse. And repeatedly, it has been uncovered of that Disney has, you know, run circles around DeSantis' team on the legal side of things. But that's not the only embarrassment that Ron DeSantis got himself into. Not even close. Because it came out in the past week, I believe this was from the Time magazine, that reported that Ron DeSantis had called a bunch of GOP congresspeople from his state, essentially begging them to hold off on endorsing Donald Trump. Because he sensed they're endorsing Donald Trump, doesn't want him to do that because that would essentially do his presidential bid. Immediately afterwards, a bunch of those Florida congresspeople, you know, they endorsed Donald Trump. One of them being Greg Stoop. And the reason why Greg Stoop endorsed Donald Trump, this will go down to a theme of Ron DeSantis has absolutely no people skills whatsoever. And that's coming from me. If anyone knows me, I don't have the best people skills at all. So for me to be insulting someone's people skills means that someone has to have the people skills of a clipboard. And I think even the clipboard even have more personal skills than Mr. DeSantis. Because if you recognize Greg Stoop's name recently, he had suffered a pretty hefty fall. Like, I think he was clearing branches from his roof or something, doing other roof work in the past couple of months after a hurricane or some other storm, and Stoop fell and got a lot of injuries. He had to go to the hospital for it. And Donald Trump called him. Like, Donald Trump called him, wished him well. Ron DeSantis did not. I know that a lot of people tend to, you know, write off politicians as, you know, though they're not representative of the people, they don't represent the people's interests. But politicians are people too. They're not robots. They have feelings. And Stoop clearly recognizes that, you know, Trump took the time out to wish him well and offers condolences and sympathy. Ron DeSantis did not. This is not going to be the only instance of this, because there are two other congresspeople. Well, actually, there were two others in the guards of redistricting. So Ron DeSantis, you know, he helped push through a GOP gerrymander of the congressional maps in the state of Florida. That honestly probably helped Democrats, considering 2022, had a fair map been put into place, Democrats would have lost more seats than they did. So accidentally backfiring, I mean, DeSantis, I mean, he didn't know what good of an environment he had. Like, you could pass the fair map and you could still probably get like 22 GOP representatives out of 29, something crazy like that. But yes, so these two, there's Gus Bilirakis, who is from Palm Harbor. Palm Harbor is in northwestern Pinellas County, that's near Tampa Bay. And he represents a district that includes that, as well as Pasco and Hernando County. What Ron DeSantis did was he drew Bilirakis out of his own district. He drew his home into what is now Ana Paulina Luna's district. And Bilirakis no longer represents his hometown. He still represents Pasco and Hernando counties. Ron DeSantis never contacted Bilirakis about the move. The same thing, I think, happened to Vern Buchanan, who represents Sarasota in the Senate, I believe. And the same thing happened here. You know, Vern Buchanan was redistricted out of his home area, and he was not consulted by Ron DeSantis or his team whatsoever. So they both ended up endorsing Donald Trump partly because of that. And another hit to Ron DeSantis' ego is, for those who don't know, Ron DeSantis, before becoming governor in 2018, he was a U.S. House representative for the 6th Congressional District. That's essentially Volusia County, Daytona Beach. And he was a representative there from 2013 all the way to 2019 when, you know, he became governor, of course. Now Ron DeSantis' own representative, Michael Waltz, he ended up joining the Trump chain as well. He endorsed Donald Trump. So your own U.S. representative, you're the governor of Florida, and your own U.S. representative decides to endorse your main opponent in a presidential election. That has got to be a gut punch straight to the ego. Ugh, I would not want that to happen to me, obviously, if I was running for any office. But this is not the only congressperson I'm going to talk about. I also need to talk about the aforementioned Ana Paulina Luna, who she is a freshman, you know, right-wing representative from Pinellas County. And she was one of the – and for those, you may understand her as being one of the main opponents to Kevin McCarthy getting the speakership. She was one of the main holdouts along with Lauren Boebert and company, you know, with the House Freedom Caucus and whatnot. But in January 2022, her father passed away after a tragic car accident. And what had happened was Donald Trump wrote a letter to her, signed it himself, and offered his condolences and sympathies. She also, Ana Paulina Luna, also got a letter from a DeSantis, Casey DeSantis. Ron DeSantis' wife. Ron himself could not be bothered to write the letter. And Representative Luna noticed this big time, and that was also said to have factored in her earlier decision to endorse Donald Trump over Ron DeSantis. So there you see, you know, Ron DeSantis's negative people skills translating into at least four endorsements, potentially five or more, for former President Donald Trump over Governor DeSantis. So that's bad enough. That is bad enough. I mean, Donald Trump, I believe, has 61 congressional endorsements compared to Ron DeSantis' three, only one of which is in Florida, and that's freshman Representative Laura Lee from the East Tampa area. But I would put a caveat and say that endorsements for national elections don't exactly matter that much. I mean, the only thing it's good for is essentially a vibe check. Like, if pretty much everybody is endorsing one guy, they think that one guy is probably going to win the primary. Considering that Ron DeSantis is not that guy, that doesn't tend to bode well for Mr. DeSantis. In addition, Donald Trump has been much more willing to attack Ron DeSantis than DeSantis is willing to attack Donald Trump. DeSantis has not attacked Trump at all. Like, he's decided that he's going to stay away from, you know, this whole, like, mudslinging stuff. But if you know anything about Donald Trump is that if he loves muzzling, he loves attacking people, anybody, pretty much. And you've got to be ready to clap back. Ron DeSantis has not been ready to clap back, especially because Donald Trump on his True Social essentially accused Ron DeSantis of being a groomer during Ron DeSantis' time as a teacher at a Georgia school. Ron DeSantis was like 19, 20 or something like that, like college age, you know? And Donald Trump accused him of drinking with underage students, essentially grooming them. And throwing the groomer term, like, for a conservative to throw a groomer insult at you, they're essentially calling you a child predator. Like, just the language of the right wing. So that's essentially not great, especially if Ron DeSantis has not said a word about that whole situation, that time where he's a teacher at Georgia school for a year. But in addition, Donald Trump in November of 2022, just after the midterms, essentially called out Ron DeSantis and said that, and Donald Trump said that essentially he made Ron DeSantis, his whole political career, you know, from the governorship on upwards. But let's just investigate. So Donald Trump said that he ended a recount because the Florida races for Rick Scott and Ron DeSantis were very close, like well within 1%. And Trump said that he stopped a recount prematurely in order to save Ron DeSantis and Rick Scott from losing. Now, that allegation was ultimately proven to be completely false. I mean, as is my in my opinion at least, as are most things with Donald Trump, of course. But is that allegation that Trump made DeSantis' whole career true? Maybe so. Maybe so, because you have to take a look back to the 2018 GOP primary, because Ron DeSantis was not exactly the favorite for that primary. The favorite was Florida Commissioner of Agriculture Adam Putnam. He does not serve that position anymore. He ended up, you know, it's because Florida has a resign to run policy. Like, Ron DeSantis resigned from his House seat in 2018. Adam Putnam resigned from being Agriculture Commissioner to run for governor. And what had happened was, you know, Adam Putnam got the endorsements of the Florida GOP establishment, including Richard Corcoran, a Speaker of the Florida House at the time, and who was a Speaker of the House at the time. He's no longer Speaker. There was also Pam Bondi, the former Attorney General of Florida at that time, and a bunch of sheriffs as well, a bunch of organizations, the Sun Sentinel and the Tampa Bay Times. But Ron DeSantis only had one major endorsement, and that was Donald Trump. And Ron DeSantis ended up winning that primary by 20 points to the dot. Like, Ron DeSantis was strongest in South Florida. His strongest county was Collier County, where he eclipsed 70% of the vote. He was very strong in Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade counties. He was also clearing 60% of the vote there. He cleared 60% in a strip going from Duval County, where Jacksonville is, to Volusia County, where Daytona Beach is. Ron DeSantis also won areas around the Panhandle, you know, Escambia to Walton County, essentially. Adam Putnam had won, you know, Polk County and a lot of areas of Central Florida, and he also won Tallahassee and the surrounding areas of essentially sort of like that Big Bend Florida, if you get my drift. But Ron DeSantis also won the Orlando metro area as well. Putnam did eclipse 60% in Polk County, Florida, to the west of Osceola County, though, so into the southwest of Orlando. So, if Donald Trump had not endorsed Ron DeSantis, would DeSantis have won that primary? Who knows? Maybe he would have narrowly won it. Maybe he wouldn't have. Who knows? Maybe Adam Putnam would have lost to Andrew Gillum. Maybe he would have won against Andrew Gillum, considering Andrew Gillum is now on trial for corruption, in federal court, and considering all the other allegations of, you know, substance abuse and whatnot. And I hope Mr. Gillum is doing well in recovery in regards to that. But there's a lot of Ron DeSantis might just be another nobody House representative if, you know, Trump didn't get his endorsements, give his endorsement to DeSantis. So if Trump's allegation is true of, you know, essentially stopping a recount in order to save DeSantis, true, not a chance, not a hope. But is it potentially true that Donald Trump's endorsement in that gubernatorial primary gave DeSantis that victory? Maybe so, because Donald Trump had – because the thing to know about Donald Trump is that, you know, of course, you're listening to this podcast, you'll know that Donald Trump has a solid group over half the GOP. You know, the majority of the GOP base, I would have to imagine. And this bears out in polling, even against Ron DeSantis. The Wall Street Journal poll that I talked about had Donald Trump, you know, leading by, I believe, 13 percentage points, 51% to 38% over Governor Ron DeSantis, you know, in that GOP primary. This is in spite of Ron DeSantis having higher favorable ratings than Donald Trump. Ron is 84% of Republican primary voters are favorable towards DeSantis compared to just 78% for Trump. Only 9% of Republicans don't like Mr. DeSantis. 20% of Republicans have an unfavorable view of the former president. But yeah, when it's Trump versus DeSantis, 51% to 38%, as I mentioned earlier. But when it comes, that's just the 1-on-1. But when it comes to the field, Donald Trump doubles up around DeSantis, 48% to 24%. 13% are undecided. You have 5% to Nikki Haley, 3% to Tim Scott for some reason. He's filed an exploratory committee the senator from South Carolina. He's got no chance. But you have other 2% to Vivek Ramaswamy, 1% to Kristi Noem, Mike Pompeo, who's not running for president. As I mentioned in an Instagram post about episode 4, it came out after that episode's released that Pompeo's not running for president. And it was Chris Sununu, governor of New Hampshire, yada, yada, yada. You get the point. Mike Pence is also 1%, funnily enough. But here's the thing. A lot of people like Ron DeSantis in the Republican Party, but the problem is they like Trump more. Like, they would be cool with Ron DeSantis being vice president. I think Trump ended up denying that possibility yesterday. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Ron DeSantis doesn't have the same pull within the base that Mr. Trump has. And that could come down from, you know, Ron DeSantis has only been a national figure for a couple of years, whereas Donald Trump has been a national political figure for, you know, almost 8 years now, and he's been a national figure for decades, but with The Apprentice and, you know, hosting WrestleMania 4 and 5, if I remember correctly, and, you know, whatnot. And that goes like decades. Like, Trump has been known, and at least in the business sphere, for decades. So Trump still has higher name recognition, although Mr. DeSantis is catching up to Donald Trump. But another thing, the reason why Trump has such high command of his base is that Donald Trump has charisma. Like, he makes, like, that Ron DeSantis is not. Like, Donald Trump, you know, is able to pull together a group of like-minded voters to tell them what they want to hear, you know, tell them what they need to hear, you know, pulling no punches, you know, that machismo type of thing that Ron DeSantis just can't hope to have. Part of that is because, again, like I mentioned in episode 4, if you ever listen to Ron DeSantis' voice, that sneeze probably has a better chance of getting past Donald Trump in a Republican primary than Governor DeSantis, because, as I mentioned earlier, zero charisma. Like, again, not the same pull that Trump has. Like, and again, like, I'm trying to remember what I was talking about. Yeah, the voice thing. Yeah. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about when you hear Mr. DeSantis speak. Ugh. And I'm not even talking about the accent. Like, that's just part of it. Like, if you have the gayest voice in all of Florida, you cannot convince me that you can get past Donald Trump in a Republican primary. That's just not happening. Like, let's be completely honest. Not happening. It also doesn't help that there are allegations made by people within the Trump campaign that Ron DeSantis eats pudding with three fingers. Like, he just sticks his fingers in pudding and eats it, like, with his hands. Those allegations are obviously not entirely true, of course, but Ron DeSantis can be very easily painted as an antisocial dork. And that has been further proven by a report in the Politico Playbook that came out earlier on the day of recording. So this comes from the time that Ron DeSantis was in the House. So this comes from Representative David Schrott, a former Republican representative from Michigan, who served with Ron DeSantis for a couple of years on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. So Schrott said, quote, "I sat right next to DeSantis for 2 years on the FAC. He never said a single word to me. He didn't introduce himself or even say hello." Schrott ended up having to take the initiative after, you know, three times it happened and DeSantis didn't speak to him. But Schrott had to introduce himself to DeSantis. But Schrott said, you know, DeSantis, you know, has, quote, "got an ability to size up the electorate and figure out what issues and hot buttons he needs to press to advance his political ambitions." But Schrott also said that DeSantis doesn't have likability. He, quote, "never developed any relationships with other members that I know of. He's just a very arrogant guy, very focused on Ron DeSantis." And that is not exactly the best assessment you would want from your former colleagues when you're trying to run for the highest elected office, not just in the land, but the world. Let's be completely honest with ourselves. I mean, if you become president of the United States, you are the most powerful person in the world. You have the power to end life as we know it hundreds of times over with nuclear weapons. Like, that is a power that cannot be taken for granted. Like, you have the power to command millions of troops at a time. Like, commander-in-chief, you have the power to essentially subject communities to different levels of spending, different levels of benefits. Like, you have a lot of power. And so when you're seeking that, you don't want, you know, you don't want your former colleagues to call you an a-hole, because that's what David Trott did. He said, quote, "I don't think he cares about people." And that's just the part of the main conundrum with Ron DeSantis. It's just like he's concerned about himself. Like, let me take you to Fort Lauderdale. If you have probably seen stories about Fort Lauderdale having pretty historic flooding, you know, once in a century type event, like major flooding. And Ron DeSantis has reportedly never reached out to Ron DeSantis. He didn't call the mayor for a time. And he didn't come to Fort Lauderdale to examine the damage, like you see a lot of executives do when a natural disaster strikes. You often see governors touring and mayors touring the site of the damage and, you know, offering their condolences and declaring states of emergencies and whatnot. Ron DeSantis is at least – he's different. He was in New Hampshire at that time, going to town halls, essentially doing a shadow campaign for president. His campaign, but not a campaign, if you understand where I'm going with this. But he went down to Florida during that time, though. It wasn't for Fort Lauderdale. It was to sign in secret a 6-week abortion ban that had passed through the Florida state legislature, as I discussed in – you know, last Friday's edition of Newsflash. It was episode 2, I believe it was, to where he signed that ban into law. So it was a secret ceremony, and he immediately flew out of Florida, back in New Hampshire, back to D.C. to continue his campaign, but not a campaign for president. So he's been getting a lot of condemnation from Donald Trump's own family. Donald Trump Jr. condemned Ron DeSantis for doing that. So... or not the abortion ban thing, for, you know, not being in Florida during the Fort Lauderdale thing. So, given everything that I have just said, given all the sneezes that I have sneezed over this past half hour, what is my verdict on Ron DeSantis' campaign? I'm not saying that he can't get the GOP nomination for president. I'm not saying that he can't become president. But a lot of things have to go right. First of all, Donald Trump has to die. And I know it sounds completely morbid, but there is no other case apart from any other way which Donald Trump could be incapacitated enough to essentially not be able to carry out the duties of president. Therefore, he would be forced to withdraw his name from the nomination, of course. And other than any of those tragic scenarios, and I hope that, and I don't think anyone is exactly hoping for that, especially not within Republican circles, but unless Trump is dead or is incapacitated, Ron DeSantis does not win the GOP nomination. And this is just an expanded version of what I said in episode 4. But like you've heard my reasonings, you know, concerns with Ron DeSantis' charisma, concerns with his people skills. But if he gets the nomination, let's just say hypothetically, gets the nomination, he runs against Biden. What then? Like, how would his electoral skills translate? I honestly don't know, because Ron DeSantis has that legislative history that Donald Trump does not. And DeSantis has signed Don't Say Gay bills into law, you know, essentially banning primary and secondary schools from talking about being queer. And, you know, essentially trying to quell the teaching of black history and all these book bannings that have been going on. DeSantis is inextricably tied to that. And if DeSantis gets the nomination, Democrats will be talking nonstop about all that. They'll also be talking about, you know, suppression of dissent regards to journalism, because there was a bill that was introduced that would require, you know, journalists to register with the Florida state government. Not exactly best when it comes to, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of journalism, freedom of the press. Basic First Amendment rights, and Democrats and liberals would be absolutely mudslinging against DeSantis for that, but also the 6-week abortion ban, which, you know, if you know anything about abortion politics, you know, with the period cycles lasting for 4 weeks, you know, women and other people can get pregnant. They'd have a maximum of 2 weeks to take a pregnancy test, determines like, oh, I've not gotten my period, and then take the pregnancy test. And sometimes the pregnancy tests don't even confirm you're pregnant until six weeks, which in that case is still already too late in the state of Florida. So what this amounts to is essentially a near total abortion ban. It's just what this is. Let's just call it for what it is. And what this does now is, you know, the nearest abortion centers, like say you're in Miami, and the nearest abortion center to you would likely be in Virginia, or it would be in New Mexico, or be in Illinois. Not exactly the best, you know, not exactly the best when it comes to convenience or travel. Like, you'd have to take a flight for that situation. And if you do pregnant to take a flight, you'd have to drive all the way out to those areas to seek abortion care. And of course, you know, there's North Carolina too, but they're about to pass their own abortion ban. I think it will be around 12 to 15 weeks when that gets introduced, because GOP just got a supermajority from a Democrat to a Republican by the name of Tricia Cotham. I'll probably cover that when it comes up, if there is a bill introduced. I'll cover that in next week's news flash. But now, when that bill goes into law, you know, I say when, because Republicans will be overriding Governor Roy Cooper's veto because they have the supermajority. I mean, that's just how power politics works. When that happens, the nearest senators will be in Virginia, New Mexico, and Illinois. So there's that impact to it as well. And Democrats and liberals will just be hammering that point home every day until the general election. Like, right now, Ron DeSantis is in a stronger electoral position in many of these key battleground states than Donald Trump is. But would that hold? I don't think it would, because, you know, Donald Trump can triangulate, and he triangulated on abortion. You know, privately, Donald Trump has said states' rights in regards to this, saying that it should be up to the states, abortion should be a state position. That's not gone well with anti-abortion and pro-life groups. They want a federal abortion ban, and they're not going to support any Republican politician who is not advocating for a federal abortion ban. Because that was the next step after Roe versus Wade, of course. I mean, for a lot of the religious right, anti-abortion religious right. So, I mean, there you go. So, it's not great for Ron DeSantis. He has a lot of obstacles he has to get through. Obviously, the primary. Like, he's not going to be beating Donald Trump in a primary, but he can get the nomination if Donald Trump, for whatever reason, cannot run, whether he's incapacitated or whether he goes 6 feet under. If he does get the nomination for president, then I don't think he'd be favored to beat either Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. He'd be more likely to beat Vice President Harris than President Biden, of course. I mean, you could get into the whole, you know, internal racism and sexism that goes on within this country. You could go into that conversation as well. But, you know, Ron DeSantis, when, you know, his policies that he's passing along, when they are talked about in the news, when the Democratic National Committee and the DNC and Democrats across the country, when they put in these ads and constantly attack Ron DeSantis over what he has signed into law, then that electoral advantage is going to evaporate. You know, Michigan is probably going to be gone regardless. I mean, I believe it's pretty clear 2016 was a fluke for the Republican Party. Now the Democrats have a statewide trifecta, and Joe Biden won it by over 3 points, I believe, in 2020. And Michigan starts out definitely leaning or even likely towards the Democratic Party. But what about Wisconsin or Michigan and Arizona, Georgia, North Carolina, or Nevada, these six other battleground states? And Democrats won all but one of them, and that was North Carolina. And even then, Republicans only won by 1.3 percentage points. What does that mean then? Like, how would the current political trends of, you know, a lot of rural shifting right, suburb shifting left, urban areas shifting both left and right, depending on demographics and whatnot, how would that play out with DeSantis as opposed to Trump? I don't know. I can't tell you I know. And quite frankly, we don't know what's going to happen with Trump anyways, even if Trump gets in, which Trump will likely be the Republican nominee. So Ron DeSantis has a huge set of obstacles that he has to overcome if he wants to become president. Not saying it is impossible, I'm just saying it is very, very, very hard to do for the governor of Florida. That wraps up episode 7 of Pulse of the Nation. Tune in next week for 3 more episodes coming your way. Thank you for listening. Have a safe day and be well.
Any opinions expressed in this program are those of the host and do not represent the thoughts or opinions of 90.7 WVUA or the University of Alabama.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.